This is Too F***ing Busy, where we set aside some of our precious time to review cultural and business things for business people who don't have the time. If you'd like to broaden your knowledge base, you might find this useful to listen to. Each show gives listeners a 1, 3, and 10 minute summary of a review, a book, a film, or a podcast to help you decide how to spend your own precious time on something culturally worthwhile. Here we go. Welcome to Too F***ing Busy. I'm Keith, host of The Fuel Podcast.
And I'm Alex. I'm the managing partner of Insight. We're a BD agency. So we do growth for business.
Right. Okay.
So I guess, why are we here? What's this about? We wanted to do this podcast because, frankly, there's so much data, so much content out there. And we just think that, you know, B2B, it's not all about who you know, it's about what you know. So we wanted to come together, and I've got a book, but also just discuss books we've read, podcasts we've heard, and try and create a summary that's quick and easy if anyone wants that knowledge.
Great stuff. All right, well, as Alex said, we're both really successful in our own field, if you like to broaden your knowledge base, you actually might find this f***ing useful to listen to. So what we've done is each show gives you a 1, 3, and 10 minute summary and review of a book, film, podcast, play, whatever we've come up with, a recommendation to help you decide sort of what little of your own precious time and money on something culturally worthwhile. So, Alex, what did you bring to the party?
What have I got in my locker, Cocker? Yeah, the good news is, just as a starter for five, I think our audience has now become self-selecting on the level of profanity, which is strong, and it's what this podcast is all about.
So, how many have we clocked up so far? How many cuss words?
We had two, Now there's only one. But I've been reading business and sales books all my life, and I think my thesis on this is they're too bloody long. They're too f***ing long. So I've decided to bring to the party What Got You Here Won't Get You There. Now, it's written by a guy called Marshall Goldsmith, who I've looked up, and he's 71 years old. This guy...
You did some research.
Well, I've done some research. I've not just read the preface for a change. And okay. He was born in Kentucky. So I've got a lot
of... Oh, nice. Okay. From my part of the country.
Yeah,
okay. No. Well, you got a minute to do a review.
A minute? Right.
Okay. 1 minute.
Are you going to say go?
I'll tell you what. Let me tee up my stopwatch, and then I will time you. Right. Ready? Are you going to do this? Oh, come on. Right. Ready? And go.
Right. So What Got You Here Won't Get You There. The central premise of this book is that although people are successful, so successful people exhibit characteristics and traits that have got them to a certain level of success. And that is typically quite often ego driven or based around personality and identity. And what they don't realize is to reach their next level of success, whether running their own business or working in a large corporation more often, those same traits and characteristics that they perceive as having been key to their first success are very much not going to get them to their second success. And more importantly, a lot of those little foibles and behavioral ticks that all great leaders have initially they might have achieved success in spite of those. In spite of being an annoying asshole, in spite of being an ego-driven lunatic, you have managed to achieve success. The principle of the book is, just because it got you here, it won't get you there, and it might not be the reason you got here in the first place. So,
okay.
There you go.
All right.
Done.
So,
nice.
So that's basically about learning new habits is the idea, right? As you move through, learn some new habits.
It's a bit covey, got a bit 7 successful habits of highly effective people, but there are 12 of them. So, you know, even better. Double bubble.
Okay, excellent. All right. Well, the book that I'm reviewing is Tom Cheese.
Well,
I haven't even started yet.
I'm going to give you a minute. You've got a minute.
No. You had a chance to tell me your fella come from Kentucky and everything, right?
Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah, background. Yeah, sorry, yeah. Right.
So the Tom Cheese, right, is a he's an applied futurist. All right, so he gets employed by big businesses to help them see what's coming down the road. All right, so ready? You can go for me now if you want.
Do it.
Okay,
go.
Right, This book's Tom Cheese writes, Future Proof Your Business. It's a new release and is available on Kindle, Amazon, and it will probably be for sale online soon. So if you're aware that your business market has changed, probably because of the virus, then you could do a lot worse than spending a few quid on Future Proof Your Business. It's available on Kindle and probably other stores for about a fiver. And if you can't get a fiver's worth out of value of it, then you're as dumb as a box of rocks. It's about building your own business into an agile one, not agile like we can do a bit of this and a bit of that, but agile like you can adapt to market changes. It's broken down into three parts, part one, part two, part three, and all of them deals with how to look at your business and see which parts are flexible and necessary. And others, the other part looks at how to build horizons. And also then the last bit, which I haven't quite finished, but I'm kind of there, is about how to interpret all that. Tom Cheese writes, really clever chap. He's a business strategy wonk, and he's employed by some of the world's biggest companies to help them plan. So he really knows what he's talking about. Oh, not bad.
Buddy, that was strong. I like the fact you actually admitted you haven't read the ending, which is great because it adds suspense.
It does. Now, I still don't know who's done it yet.
That's fine. I like it. So that's good. So that's what's that? Oh, 1 minute. So my takeout from that is that he's questioning the structure, the very building blocks of business, and giving you the keys you need to audit that with this new vision to recognise what's required and what's flexible.
Correct. Lovely. I mean, it's quite an interesting. I'll come on to later. It's not like this is like completely original, but it's a great way of thinking about things. And I love the way that he's kind of, he puts these things across. So I'm very, very kind of into it at the moment. I think it's a great book.
And is it impacting your personal life in any way? Because often when I read a business book, it makes me behave differently with my loved ones. Are you seeing much of that? Are you being futuristic with your family?
Well, I'm ignoring my loved ones because I'm reading it, yeah. But no, he's, I don't know, I interviewed him recently on our, on the Fuel podcast. And he's fascinating. He's a fascinating guy because, you know, normally he's doing like the speaker circuit and everything else right now, but he can't sort of do that. So, it's very good. And it's an interesting way to look at your business. And yes, I am taking some lessons away from it for sure.
Nice.
But I'll come on to that.
Yeah.
So, what I've learned, effectively, I guess that ties into your one as well, because it's basically everything that I've learned up to this point, especially given the virus and stuff, you have to learn a new set of skills, right?
Yep, you got to keep changing. So I think that's it's a pretty good take up for me. This book has just got me sitting like a nodding dog, recognizing all of my falling personality traits and behaviors. So it's been a bit depressing, to be honest. But yeah, no, I found it valuable. But
What do you mean appalling traits and behaviors?
Well, just, you know, talking over people, not listening, contradicting. But, well, I'll get into that. We can get into that
all right.
In a long story.
Well, now's your 3 minute, okay? You want to do a 3 minute one now?
Yeah, let's do 3 minutes.
Okay, right, ready? Three, yes. Two, one, go.
So I would recommend this book really to anybody. And I think that's mostly because the insights in here are more to do with human behavior and broad personality types than it has to do with any specific sphere of business. It's a classic, it's one of those classic books that's based on enormous amounts of experience and interviews and development of knowledge over time. So Goldsmith worked as a coach on a one-to-one basis, typically called in to larger businesses by CEOs who are looking at up-and-coming executives who they think might be able to make it and are delivering, already very successful people delivering great numbers, but who, because of a few character defects or behavioral flaws, uh-huh, won't make the grade. So I just think, it, from what I read, so there's some really interesting takeouts, there's some obvious stuff. Like all of these books, it could have been a pamphlet, and I'll bore you another time about the novel things. So what's my 3 minute takeout? Interesting stuffs are, just because you're successful, don't assume that your poor and bad behaviors are actually fine because you're successful. You might be successful in spite of that. The second point, which I found fascinating, organizations incentivize action or positive behavior. By that, I mean If you do something and you create an action and it achieves good work, that's disproportionately incentivized. If you don't make an error or you move away from doing something negative, that isn't really valued in companies. It is in your personal life. So if I go, oh, I've stopped smoking, everyone's like, that's fantastic. In the business, if I go, I didn't screw that, I didn't fuck that thing up, people are like, well, bloody right. Bloody right. He uses the Time Warner AOL gigantic cocker, being a business that felt like they should act but didn't actually need to. Then he goes, there's quite a lot here, so I'm going to run out of time. But broadly, three quick points that I quite like. The idea that your traits are inherent in your individual identity and your personality, the premise that once someone gets to a certain age, their identity is fixed. If you look at the Jesuit idea of give me a boy till he's six and I'll show you the man, he's okay. Basically saying, that's all bollocks. The truth is, whether the fact you talk over people and don't listen doesn't, that isn't it, not inherent to your identity. That's just a poor behavioral flaw, and you can fix that.
Okay.
Another point he made, which I thought was really interesting, is, you know, most CEOs, most leaders, they want to be the best, and they want to improve things. And as they develop teams and resource underneath them, their temptation when someone brings a good idea to them is go, what a great idea. They think they're being positive. What a great idea. Why don't you do it this way, a little bit different? And whilst they may have improved that actual idea by 5%, which is great, the loss of motivation and ownership that that individual in the organization then feels is so disruptive, it's better just to let them get on with it, because it's going to totally take away. And I thought that was really interesting.
That's your time up anyway. There's your 3 minutes. But that is a great point. That's a fantastic point.
Yeah, that really stood out, that one.
I mean, how many times? I mean, I've done it and I've been victim of exactly the same thing as well, is that you listen to somebody and you try and be supportive and go, oh, yeah, no, that's a great idea. I think that's fantastic. And then, but what if we did this and you try and improve it or put a shine on it? That can be so demotivating. That's amazing. Yeah,
I do it all the time. I think my
confession.
No. Trust me, mate. It is.
Yeah, your team's going to listen to this, you know.
Well, hopefully, yeah. I realise that I'm lots of positive. Every time someone comes to me, I'll go, because I've read my books on being positive. I'm like, brilliant idea, fantastic, strong, great idea. Trying to talk like Trump, obviously not. But then I'll be like, have you thought about this or doing it this way? And then I think I might also be guilty of owning the success afterwards, which is
right. And then it becomes partly your idea and you can't credit them with all the success.
Yes, I just feel like I should apologize to all the people I've worked with over the last 15 years. It's just this horrendous. Oh. When you read the book, you see these habits, you're like, oh my God. I mean, there are far worse. Don't get me wrong, but they resonate.
I've just got to say to anyone listening to this, despite the fact that Alex is being incredibly humble, he's actually sitting in front of a very well-stocked cellar of wine right now in Portugal. So let's not think he's making too many reparations.
Right? Thank you. But not my cellar, not my wine, not my house. But yeah, I'll accept that.
Okay, well, he broke into someone's house and now he's making a podcast from it. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. So I've done my 3 minutes. Come on, let's.
Okay.
I'll tee you up. You ready?
Okay.
Ready? Three?
Yep.
You're definitely ready. You ready?
Yeah, go on, go.
Three, two, one, go.
Who would have thought that this pandemic's going to blow all our plans out of the water? Every business person I know that could be bothered to plan and develop forecasts has failed to plan for what's just happened, which means there's going to be a lot of businesses failing in the not too distant future because they can't adapt. It's a bit like when that great sodding huge meteor crashed into Earth and sent clouds of dust into the atmosphere, which made the plants die. And then there was less oxygen, so the dinosaurs couldn't adapt. And then they became fossils. The smaller ones that could climb trees to get to cleaner air, greener leaves, and all those that could take to the water went on to become monkeys and dolphins. They were agile. Agile businesses are going to survive and thrive through this pandemic. And there's a quick lesson in evolution as well. So in Tom Cheesewright's Future Proof Your Business, the applied futurist teaches business people how to create an agile business in three easy steps. How to work out which bits of your business are adaptable and can be repurposed for other tasks. How to make a short-term, medium-term, and long-term plan for market changes. And then how to put it all together and be ready to respond to those changes. And the bit that I really liked was the three horizons. Like you just pulled out a big quote there as well. the short, medium, and long-term horizons and what you can expect will be threats and opportunities that come out of them. It's a great exercise to go through. As I said before, a lot of Tom's or some of Tom's theories kind of follow standard good practice for business owners, but he's got a really good way of putting the thoughts across. And I found myself kind of really wanting to make notes as I ran along, which was really hard because I was reading it on a Kindle. But if I was going to summarize this, which is the point of the show, I would say there are certain immutable truths for business in the 2020s, and they are that everything we know before is not going to be anymore. And if you as a business owner are sitting there expecting it all to go back to how it was, then that's not going to happen. And it's a bit like when you find your old Led Zeppelin t-shirt and you put it on and you're a lot fatter than you were when you bought it. So it kind of stretches out of shape and it's never the same again. If nothing is going to be like it was before, then changes are inevitable. And if you don't change or aren't prepared to change and you're trying to bend the world to your will, then it's not going to be long before you're scrambling about playing catch up. It happened with the digital revolution and it's going to happen and with the distancing revolution. If you can audit your business, look at the parts that work and work well, and do some future gazing and imagine the new challenges for your business and then change, you should be in good shape. How am I doing for time?
You've got 25 seconds. You've got to fill it.
Okay. Well, just please.
What colour's the book? What colour is it?
I'll come on to that in a bit. Just don't think that this is temporary and it's all going to go back to where it was. Things have changed and that has to be a good thing. And it's about trying to be positive about it. And if I was going to do, you know, I'd be quoting this at dinner parties like Trump shills hydroxychloroquine. You know, it's just a fantastic book and I really got some good takeaways out of it.
Fantastic. That's your time. Time up. Time at the bar.
Hey.
Very well done. Very good, sir. I like it.
And I managed to say hydroxychloroquine without stumbling.
That was good. I was impressed by that. Do you not think, between you and me, it's quite McKinsey-esque in its horizon planning nature, and it's something they've been doing for a while. So Horizon.
Yes, it is.
It's a McKinsey idea, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That your hurdles shouldn't be time-bound.
No, and I think the cool thing is you can actually do it for, it's like in our business, okay, the business of new business. There's a whole load of kind of changes taking place. But in the short term, the practices, the ways that we do things aren't going to change too terribly much. But over the course of the next 2 to 3 years, they're going to really change. And if you can predict how they're going to change, then you can start to make plans to get to that point instead of just completely, you know, they like to call it pivoting, but basically it's failing to plan. Because I think the whole point to the book is that it gets you gradually there and allows you to think, okay, well, these parts of the business are non-essential and these parts of the business I need to keep. And I think that's been a very, very good exercise for me to go through, certainly.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because this is about drilling down, focusing, and the other people are talking about expanding. You know, we've discussed creating different revenue streams.
Sure.
Different types of businesses. We all dream of the unearned income. You just sit in your couch getting fat, making money. It's quite hard to achieve that stuff.
It's easy.
Definitely in lockdown. Franzosinia, just look them up, they're delicious. So good. So I'm going to take your recommendation. I'm going to read that book. It sounds very good.
Okay, well, it's only a fiver, I think, because he's normally sort of doing the speaker circuit and things like that. So his business has changed as well. And I think it's been, you know, as I say, it's been quite interesting to look at the way that our business or my business runs and then looking at the parts of it that you could augment and you can repurpose for other things. And I think I've got a buddy of mine, the guy that does all our tech as well. And he has a very similar construct to his business. And first of all, we thought, okay, well, this is just a kind of an everyman kind of theory to running a business. But it's nice to have it affirmed in a book in terms of the fact that, you know, if you have a company and let's say, I mean, you know, say for example, like a big old company like Xerox, and if it has a fabulous HR setup, Then that HR setup could be repurposed and could be outsourced. You could lend that to other services. It can augment other businesses, and you can develop other revenue streams off the back of that. And I think that is a really good way of developing a business, so that you actually have multiple income streams and you're never dependent on one thing or the other. You can always switch channels if you need to.
I think so. It's really interesting example, Xerox, because I think they famously in the 70s, they were really ahead of their time. And they, I think I'm right in saying, they were very early on the GUI, graphic user interface.
Oh, yes,
and
yes, yes.
That's right, isn't it? And they were going down a road that would have seen them be a precursor to Apple, what Big Steve was doing, where they decided to sack it off and you know, double down on the Xerox machines, probably because the name was the key.
Yes.
So, I
could be 100% wrong here, but wasn't the original Windows interface based on the Xerox interface?
Well, possibly. I mean, I think what we should do is look it up afterwards.
Do some research maybe before
and then
we say these
in
things.
Like we know. We'll do that.
So 10 minutes on future-proof your business, all right? So now I know that Tom... he actually fast-tracked the publication of this book because of the pandemic coming out. And that is probably the best example of him walking the talk, because he's actually doing what his book recommends. He's adapted to the change in the environment and he's made his business fit the changes. So, you know, bravo, Tom. So he helps companies kind of see the future more clearly. So he's kind of like a sort of a modern Nostradamus fella. He's very much in demand, or was in demand before the pandemic hit. And he does kind of speaking gigs, and he works with companies like BMW, Facebook, BP, and Sony and stuff. And I mean, like for you, Alex, I mean, do you think that like the world of business development has been forever changed by this pandemic?
I mean, there's a lot of stuff on this across the interweb about, you know, you've got a spectrum of responders, people who are saying it's never going to be the same again, and people who are saying it's going to be the same pretty quickly. And right. there's two takes on this. I think that, is the world of BD, business development, ever going to be the same again? We lived through 2008. That was a similar, you know, scale of crisis, but different depth and impact. It's, you know, the cliche being thrown around is never squander a good crisis. I think that what drives business development is change, because actually you need to break the status quo, because otherwise there's no opportunity, because the incumbent partners are in place. So I remember when I was about 400 years ago running an independent design agency, and they did the number changes. Remember, they went from, well, this is in the UK, but a telephone number format change.
Oh, yes, telephone numbers.
It's probably one of the greatest opportunities for the design industry, because everybody's got to update their stationery, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. So when one of those came along, it was pretty juicy because it created a lot of opportunity. Right now, even before we went into this, brand marketers were going, they were already looking harder. Do we need an agency? Do we do it in-house? Do we decouple it? You know, who does what? And this has given them a breathing space where, A, because they're quite tough, they're either going to renegotiate their existing contracts to look for benefit, or they're going to go out and have a look. So basically every brand in the world, much to your point, every brand in the world is now planning. Mm. What are we going to do then? Well, that is the best possible opportunity for business development.
I think, yes.
People are looking.
I think you're absolutely spot on there. And I mean, it's like I said earlier, is that this is going to generate a hell of a lot of change, because, I mean, even the big companies, you know, they anticipated, they employed PR agencies to, you know, to forecast ahead of, you know, what would happen if all their C-suite died in a plane crash, or what would happen if, you know, if there was a terrorist attack and stuff like that. But what they didn't plan for was a pandemic. And I think the changes that have happened now for business have made it have created a world of opportunity, because basically I was talking to a fella yesterday, and I mean, they're not, their stuff's not going back until at least July. Now, the point to that is that, you know, he's got like 90 to 100 people on his payroll, and nobody else is going back. But that means that now their business has a chance to renegotiate its landlord's contract and look at other ways to have its office running and stuff like that. And I think that gives a lot of opportunity for brand and sort of marketing agencies to sort of get in there and start to make some changes to them.
I totally agree. I mean, I subscribe to the theory that there's, you know, there's a finite amount of wealth running around the world, and it's going to go somewhere, you know, which is why the UK, I think I'm right in saying, recently sold its debt, you know, 10-year bonds, I think it was, a negative interest. So you're paying the UK government to lend the money. And similarly, the Germans have been doing that for a while.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? To your point, if you can think laterally, then you're going to be able to create opportunity.
Yes. Yeah, I think that, and it's about having an adaptive mind. I think that, you know, if you're open to making changes to a business, and that you're not constricted. I mean, one of the things that Tom talks about in his book is the difference between what he calls monolithic businesses. So, you know, like your big companies where, you know, sort of change happens very slowly, and your agile businesses, in which can also be big, but depending on the way they're structured, means that they're able to adapt to changes a lot quicker. And I mean, I think that, you know, one of the big takeaways on this book, and it may sound a bit trite, but it's a very short read. It's 150 odd pages, you know, or 100, I think it's 137 pages or something. But, you know, a lot of these books are really thick and they're really heavyweight and stuff to get through. And, you know, you often get this sort of like that. I was thinking about, you know, in the old days, if you wrote a management book, it's like you phone up the publisher and they go, well, how many pages you got? You go, 150. And they go, well, we need a minimum of 300. You know, have you got any Lee Iacocca stories or, you know, sort of management bullshit that we can throw in there just to pad it out? This is absolutely free of any of those kind of stories. So, you know,
I'll tell you what, mate, you've really hit on something that I happily bore people about at length in social situations, which is ideas are best communicated originally in pamphlet form. You know, if you read Gladwell, Outliers, Blink, Tipping Point, you could describe that idea, which is an interesting idea, in a 20-page pamphlet. But to get the bloody thing published, he has to fill 350 pages. And what you do, very similar with What Got You Here Will Get You There. You need to really pad out the book with lots of narrative and lots of examples. I wish, you know, Dickens didn't publish novels. He published gazettes, which is why the novels are so bloody long. I wish the publishing industry would just wake up to the fact that the classic novel format isn't necessary. You don't have to produce content at that scale to communicate ideas. And, you know,
exactly.
It's just frustrating because it's because of the physicality of a book. You know, you pick it up, the language is a weighty tome, and they just
need shelf creaker.
exactly, and it's like, come on, it's the quality of the thinking, not the quantity of the words.
Well, what you've just described there, Alex, is a thing that I heard recently is described as it's called getting to the high concept. Okay, now, this is best explained, and I think this is a great high concept. When they were selling the idea of the movie Alien, okay, the high concept was, this is Jaws on a spaceship.
Love it, yeah, Jaws in space. So I think I've heard that. So, and actually, I quite
and
like
that. That is great, because that is exactly what you were talking about. It's like, describe it in 10 words, and that's why I think the point to our podcast is actually there's definitely an idea here, and we need to work it up. But the idea of summarizing a book in a minute, if you can't do it in a minute, I don't want to read it.
Exactly. And also, I think that, you know, other than the narrative and the detail, which is honestly example after example after example, other than that, you're there, really. The challenge is, it's not about understanding the idea, it's about applying the practice. And what Marshall says quite rightly is, anyone that's been on a leadership program, done some firewalking with Tony Robbins, knows that after that really deep, engaging experience, they find newfound energy and ideas, but it very, very rarely gets followed through, which is why Covey's habits, the idea of a habit is so critical to change. Most of it is, you know, just bloody do this, 80% just doing it, 20% understanding it. So
how do you... Okay, so I'm interested in this because, again, I think when we talked about the impact of the virus, I think we talked about habits and the difference between a habit and an actual sort of way of life. But how do you go about turning things into a habit?
It was an interesting point. I think this is something that I discussed occasionally with my business partner. When you're younger, it's quicker.
Right.
So you can develop habits in about 20 days. When you're older, it takes about 40 to 60 days to develop a habit. So for me, a habit is I cycle to work every day.
Right.
I no longer go through decision making. It's what I do. It's not conscious. So you're basically creating a pathway, aren't you? How long does it take to establish a new neurological pathway where when you go to work, you don't go, can I face the hill? You go, I cycle to work. That's what I do.
Right.
What dear old Marshall talks about is, you want to instigate a habit, you have to make yourself accountable to others. So in his last chapter, which turn over my notes, basically he's a big advocate of 360 feedback.
Okay.
And the idea being use a third party, use technology, survey everybody, all the peer-to-peer touch points in your organization. And you approach that process with some caveats, going, look, we want you honest and tell the truth, be truthful, but you have to let go of the past. You've got to be supportive, not cynical, and ideally you find something that you too could improve on and recommend to them. Now, I think 360 feedback's interesting. The point he makes is people use shorthand to help them understand the world, right? So they're always looking to, if you've read Steve Peters's The Chimp Paradox, it talks about the computer, the monkey, and the human. And the basic way human being mind works is I need to create shorthand to deal with all this crap I'm seeing every day. So people will make assessments of you. They go, oh, that guy, he always talks over people. And so they'll develop something called a selection bias. So all the times you don't talk over them, they won't notice it. But when it's called a confirmation bias, yep. I think. But when that one time you forget and you did talk over them, they're like, oh, there's that bastard talking over me again. So his argument for including people in this process, the kind of how am I doing thing, is it makes them conscious of your own efforts to change. Because otherwise, even though you are changing as an individual, the people around you, because of their bias, won't see it. So it's quite, you know... It's quite a brave thing to do if you're working in an American organization where there's a pretty tough corporate culture and you can't show weakness. You know what I mean?
It's always good to recognize your own kind of weaknesses. And in fact, it's interesting you said that because Tom talks about a similar thing in Future Proof Your Business. So talking about, you know, an agile company is one where you can get feedback very, very quickly from the front line. So, and be able to process it. And it's kind of hyper, I think he called it hyper decisiveness or hyper decision making, which is the ability to get lots and lots of different inputs at any one time. And you know that the quality of information coming to you is of sufficient, you know, that you'll be able to make a good decision on it. So, and there's an interesting thing that he said about companies that are slow to react is that they may have good employees, okay, with big companies. But the thing about good employees is that they overcome bad processes in a business. A good employee will fix things just as part of their duty, and you think they're a good employee for doing it, okay? But that doesn't fix the problem. So I think that what Tom's getting to is that a good employee is somebody that can identify an issue and to feed that back to you as an issue, and then for you to be able not to react negatively to it, but to then take it on board and say, okay, this is something we need to change. So, you know, you can identify bad processes very, very quickly. And then that kind of, you know, and it's all about communication. So, you know, it may sound a little bit kumbaya, you know, but I mean, it's the thing is, I've in the short space of time it's taken me to read the book, I've actually followed the advice and I've implemented it and it works. It's already worked. I've already got it working. So what else can I say?
No, it's interesting because I asked you at the beginning whether your learnings were coming into your corporate life and your personal life and that sure. flowing of, and it sounds like they are. No, I think whenever you get into these books and you I think the NLP, you know, the neuro-linguistic yeah. programming, all the Richard Bandler stuff from the 70s, the term is chunking up. You know, when you chunk up these ideas, there's so many similarities because the common denominator is human beings, right? So ultimately, you're going to go, oh, that's so very similar to Mr. Goldsmith over here uh-huh. talking about being awake to critical feedback, you know? And actually, most people, because you're in a position of authority, won't directly feed back to you. So you need to be, he described an exercise where you need to be alert to response, and it might be a passive response. For example, what's eye contact like? Are people eye rolling? Are they looking away? What's their body language like? Is it defensive? Or, you know, what's their time to respond? Is there some kind of, I'll deal with it, I can't deal with it now? And he suggests that you spend a week just being conscious of people, how they respond to you, what you say, where, and then at the end of that period, write down, is it positive or negative? You know? So I think that, and he describes a situation where a guy was always saying, yeah, you said that. And he realized that all of his coworkers were just driving him crazy with this particular expression where he's talking over people and, you know, running ahead of them. But no one stops to think or listen because you don't have that viewpoint. You're too much in it and not on it. So, yeah, I think there's some really interesting similarities between the two. I would say I do think, you know, it's large organizations perennially try and create cultures that make them more nimble and responsive. And I'm talking to a lot of people from marketing sites who don't want to target your marketing manager in a brand. They want to target the brand's internal innovation fund.
Right.
So they're all trying to create internal accelerators. So, you know, make it up. Royal Caribbean might have set aside 100 million quid to find out what's happening next, you know, that's where they're going with it. And those budgets are, you know, they're not P&L accountable. They're innovation budgets. They're, mm-hmm. you know, so that's a really interesting space to work in.
There's a lot of kind of, I think the one of the other positives that we can bring out of that. I mean, that's a very good one. And I'll see that one and I'll raise you for the fact that if you look at our market and our clients in terms of the world of advertising, marketing and the sort of branding and all that sort of thing, you know, that they're already starting to move away from chasing the kind of big TV gigs and all that sort of things. And their agencies and brands are starting to invest a lot more in the kind of the quick bite sort of YouTube stuff, the podcasting stuff. And that's where the market's kind of heading to. Found this fantastic quote, a fellow called Chester King, who's the CEO of the British Esports Association.
Yeah.
And he went on record recently to say to live sports sponsors to move their money into esports. And he's literally saying, where else are you going to advertise right now? You know,
yeah, it's a no-brainer, and it's such a fast-growing category, and it's
it hasn't got any of the restrictions that the current, you know, so pretty much anything goes at the moment. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think ironically, esports is as accessible to young children as football in terms of the ability to play,
yep.
and as unlikely to be successful as football in terms of becoming a Premier League player. So, you know, those 13-year-olds are going, no, I'm all right doing 10 hours gaming a day because I'm going to be a Premiership. They might be. You might be. That's true. But you're in a 0.00000. Do you know what I mean? Percentile yes. of doing that. So the worry is they all become morbidly obese, depressed, and don't go out. So pros and cons. I think there's pros and cons to these things. But yeah, the general sense of flexibility is made. Definitely, you've got to be flexible.
Well, I think that, you know, and I think that comes back to the point of where Tom is driving with the book is that the flexibility and agility are some great qualities for a business these days. So we're not talking about building empires anymore. What we're talking about are building small tactical units of of a, you know, an entity that can be deployed into several different sort of situations and create revenue streams from that. And I think that is a really interesting way to run a business, in that, you know, you're not stuck on the top floor of a company at any one time. You're actually just basically keeping plates spinning around, you know, a sort of a myriad of different little entities. And that is fascinating, because another thing that's going to come out of this whole business is that I think a lot more people are going to be, you know, this is a massive kickstart for the gig economy, for people to be doing sort of side hustles and stuff like that. And I think that is where people are going to start to learn that they can have three or four different income streams and still be able to manage quite nicely. So, you know, I think this has been quite empowering, this whole experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I agree with that. Although anyone who's working in the gig economy currently and obviously didn't benefit from furlough, obviously you see all the Uber drivers, it's tough, right? So it's pros and cons. It's good when it's good, but when it's bad, it's very, very bad. So there's always that cultural relationship between flexibility, freedom, choice, and then there's risk, support, you know, social responsibility. And it's a balance, you know, and different cultures have different approaches. I think the US is pretty tough on the upside. You can make your own way, you can make £1 million as a sales guy in a year, but you're on a no notice, right? So
you come in and find your job.
But that's how the US culture likes it. You know, we want to wait for success, wait it up. I want to be waited on that side, not wait for, but actually that's where I want my focus to be. Whereas obviously different cultures are very much a towards culture. It's very much, I want to succeed and focus on that. It's not what happens if I fail.
Well, I think, okay, well, look, let's try and wrap this up, because there's a tailpiece to this. And we came up with some statistics that we were going to grade the books by. Okay. Did you do that exercise?
I'm doing it.
You're doing it live, aren't you?
Yeah, but don't worry, because I read the book, so I'm well placed to do that. I haven't got them in front of me. So
all right. Okay. Well, look. Okay. Well, I'll go first. That will give you a bit more time. Okay.
Right. Brilliant.
All right. So you write your notes very quickly. You don't have to feedback any information here. So, in summary, this is Future Proof Your Business. I've been using the book and I've been following its principles, and not like some sort of deranged disciple, although I have to say, I do think there's a slight man crush I'm developing for Tom. I think he's a great fella. But he does, you know, I do understand where he's going with the logic of the book. I would recommend it. I like it. I like Tom, and and the theory actually worked kind of in a live environment. So here's the vital statistics. This is the rundown. Number of pages, 130. Intellect level, I would put about 6 or 7. Front cover, design isn't really Tom's thing, and it's kind of like three arrows pointing right or three pyramids disappearing into the distance. It wouldn't make me pick it up, but it was fast-tracked. And so if I could offer some advice, maybe we might look at the artwork somewhere along the line. Other one, does the author look like he knows what he's talking about? Absolutely. He's wearing glasses. He looks like a boffin. He knows what he's talking about. And as I say, I mean, I've put I've put the works into practice, and it seems to be good. The book is called Future Proof Your Business. The author is Tom Cheesewright, and the Kindle version's a fiver, so it's great value. So also check out Tom's website and podcast at tomcheesewright.com, and he's on Twitter at Book of the Future. Over to you, Alex.
Marvelous. What was the fifth one? I got the first four. What was the fifth one?
Just summarize the book.
Okay. So what would I say about the book? Well, I can't give you a page count, because I stopped reading books a while ago. So I'm all about Audible. I listen to books, and I typically do that when I'm cycling. But it's a good 7 hours on the listen. I'd say anyone should read this book, definitely. It's the kind of thing that transitions into your behavior as a whole. And it gives you, it's quite tough sometimes. He doesn't hold back when he's showing examples of how leaders and ambitious and successful people get it wrong. And some of the things genuinely will be not painful, but certainly they'll have you nodding. So right. I definitely say anyone should read this book, irrespective of whether they see themselves as a current or future CEO or just a nice human being. At 7.5 hours listen, let's make that up, feels like about 300 pages. Yeah, like I said, I reckon you could have probably got the ideas across in about 30 minutes. And but the examples he uses, when you read the long form book or listen to the long form book, they hammer home. So there's always nuance in examples. I think that it is worth committing to the long form, whether you read it or you listen to it, because actually every single example gives you a slightly different take on what he's trying to describe. And it makes you remember the behaviors, because they're obviously illustrated as opposed to just being a list. In terms of the cover, I can't comment because it was an audible, but if it was me, I would have a picture of a man looking up a mountain carrying the wrong tools. I maybe come back on that. That's my frustrated design coming
okay.
out.
All right, you're suggesting designs. Okay.
I'm saying, yeah, probably not required. But in terms of the book, yeah, definitely. It's available everywhere. I mean, he's a well-renowned guy. It's a bit of a classic.
Does he look like he knows what he's talking about?
He looks like he's lived a long time. Yeah, I mean, he's 71. So,
Well, a young fella then.
Yeah, a young chap, good-looking chap. Very, very nice moustache from what I can see.
Lovely.
But, yeah, no, I'd give it, in terms of intellectual complexity, it's probably about a 3. Oh. You know, it's not communicating difficult ideas or complex ideas that are hard to understand. This is a book that's about emotional quotient, EQ, not IQ. So on an EQ, it's a straight 10. But on IQ, you know, there's nothing particularly NASA demanding in terms of intellect in this book, but the resonance level is very high. So yeah, it's a strong recommendation. I'm giving it a firm 8 out of 10.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It's strong. There are other books you could read that might change your life more, but this is a book you should have in your armory and will only benefit you and the people around you, both your friends and family and your peers and employees.
Fantastic. Well, that's a great recommendation. So the title again is?
What Got You Here Won't Get You There.
Brilliant. That's really good.
It's a good book. Yeah, it's good.
Nice. Okay, well, I think that kind of brings us to a close. I think we can kind of wrap it up there. You want to do this again?
Yeah, well, let's do it again. Yeah, let's do it. I've already got a book I want to do because I've read a bit of it.
Okay.
And I actually watched the video of his. So the guy's name is Jim Collins. Famous business Jim Collins, famous business consultant and speaker.
Okay.
An amazing coach, right? He wrote From Good to Great. And I keep reading, like, you know, HubSpot are no longer talking about the funnel, right? They're talking about the flywheel.
That's the second time I've heard that in 2 days.
Flywheel. He invented that concept. So, I've sat in, I've been to some, there are a couple of consultants, so I won't mention, working in marketing today for agency, like top end agency growth strategy consultants, and I went to their events and a lot of their IP. When I read his book, I was like, so it seems to be currently, if you're going to read it, you might as well read it at the source. So I want to talk about Jim Collins, Good to Great.
Okay, well, that's good. All right, sounds good. So that's enough for this episode. Alex and I'll be back when we can find enough time to record another one in the next couple of weeks. So as they say, stay tuned. Thanks to Alex. Details of the books reviewed are in the show notes, as well as the email addresses for complaints, which we always love to read. So we'll see you on the flip-flop when Alex and Keith review another book, film, TV show, or podcast that will help you be almost as brilliant as we are. Just joking, we're still learning. Well, we all are, aren't we? See ya!